Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Nerds and geeks, hold on to your seats because it's about to go down. Welcome to Nerdorama, the voice of the Nerd Nation. I'm Mo Kelly, he's Tawala Sharp, and together we bring you your daily dose of nerd news, analysis, and conversations with the best and brightest of the nerdverse.
Amy Morin is a best-selling author and psychotherapist. She's the author of the international bestseller, 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. She is also a regular contributor to CNBC, Forbes, Business Insider, and Psychology Today.
So I have a Facebook friend whose life seems perfect. She lives in a gorgeous house, and she has a really rewarding career. And she and her family go on all these exciting adventures together on the weekends. And I swear that they must take a professional photographer along with them. Because no matter where they go or what they do, the whole family just looks beautiful. And she's always posting about how blessed she is and how grateful she is for the life that she has. And I get the feeling she's not just saying those things for the sake of Facebook, but she truly means it. How many of you have a friend kinda like that? And how many of you kind of don't like that person sometimes?
But now she's written 13 Things Strong Kids Do. Think big, feel good, act brave. To help kids develop healthy habits, build mental strength, and take action toward becoming their best selves. Amy Morin joins me now on the line. Thank you for coming on this evening, Amy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
I don't know where to start, so let me start in a general sense. What is the difference between mental weakness and strength? What is that power that's in between the two or separates the two?
So it's all about the way you think, feel, and behave. Now, all of us have the power to build mental strength. It's about the choices you make. Sometimes people think, well, I wasn't born strong. We don't say that about physical strength. We know you have to go to the gym, you have to lift weights, and then if you quit doing that over time, your muscles get weak. Mental strength is the same. And it's not about being overly positive when it comes to thoughts. It's about knowing you'll have negative thoughts sometimes, but you can choose to believe them or not, and you can choose how to respond to them. And in terms of our emotions, it's about knowing that you're going to experience uncomfortable emotions, but you don't have to numb it. You don't have to avoid it. You can go through those feelings. And then in terms of our actions, it's about knowing you can take some kind of positive action no matter what sort of circumstances you face in life.
But kids, though, kids are this complicated bunch, and life comes at them at different speeds. And I think that's a great start to our conversation. I intellectually understand and accept and believe everything you said. But when I think about it within the context of kids, I mean, some hit puberty earlier. Some come from economically challenging environments. Some lose a parent and experience grief at a young age. I mean, just how they conceive of emotions and life experiences is just, it's all very at the beginning stages. Is there a universal starting point to your approach for kids?
It's never too soon to start teaching kids about mental strength, and it's important for parents to know that being strong isn't the same as acting tough. Sometimes we think that the strong kid is the one that never cries. Well, that's not true. It takes a lot of strength to experience an uncomfortable emotion and especially to express it or to ask for help. And in the simplest forms, we can start teaching kids about mental strength just by helping them identify how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And to know that a kid who says, I'm angry, is much less likely to kick you in the shins. They just need to express their anger in a way. Kids who can't, who don't have that language, often have to show you how they feel. When we give them those words, it takes a lot of the sting out of it. A kid who can say, I'm anxious, feels a little bit better as soon as they identify that. There's really simple things we can start teaching preschoolers all the way on up, and that it's a lifelong process.
You told a story about losing your mother, which I thought was so powerful, so impactful, and so prescient in many ways as far as everything else I think you would go on to do. And I think about that within the context of just parents and their relationships with children, not grief specifically, but how should parents from where you sit try to get at those deep-seated issues or those really heavy issues when kids are still just learning about life in general? Is there a better time or a better way to go about these things?
There is. As parents, it's so tempting to try to take away our kids' pain. So when they're upset, we cheer them up or we calm them down. Or when they have negative thoughts about something, we reframe it for them. We say, oh, no, honey, don't worry about that. We tell them that their feelings are wrong. And ultimately, we're not teaching them how to manage their own emotions. So rather than when your kid is nervous about something, kid says, I don't think I'm going to pass my math test. Instead of saying, oh, you'll do fine, we should ask them, what would you say to a friend who thought they couldn't pass their math test? Mm-hmm. The kid would probably have some kind words for their friend. We want to teach them, how do you talk to yourself like that? By turning it around and asking them that question, we start training them from a young age. How do you deal with negative thoughts? Or when they're nervous about something, instead of saying, don't worry about it or it's not a big deal, we should acknowledge, okay, you're really worried. What can we do about these anxious feelings? Maybe they go for a walk. Maybe they color a picture. Maybe they learn how to take some deep breaths. We want to make sure that we're giving them real life tools that work in the moment and that can work for them throughout the rest of their lives.
When I look at this title, 13 Things Strong Kids Do, think big, I think that makes sense to me. Feel good, I think that makes sense to me. But you end with act brave. And I don't know if it's a play on words where you're saying acting brave, even though you may not feel brave. What is this about bravery, which is so important for kids growing up from where you sit?
You got it exactly. That sometimes we don't feel brave, but we can act brave even when we don't feel it. And today's kids are so afraid of failure. A lot of them don't dare put themselves out there. Or they struggle to calculate risks. The kid that will take the stunts on his bike might not recognize that that's way riskier than giving a speech in front of the class.
Right.
We need to teach kids how to recognize the risks that they face, how to tolerate healthy anxiety, how to face some of their fears, even when it feels scary to do that.
I suspect that it's in the book, but I want to hear it from you. After you identify that you have a potentially strong child or something that strong kids naturally do, what is the self-reinforcement mechanism that we can give to kids? It's one thing when kids may start off strong or they develop the strength, but then life happens and then life gets in the way and it sometimes chips away at that strength, or you wonder, or we all may wonder just as human and fallible individuals, whether we have enough strength for the next test. What reinforcement mechanisms do you recommend?
So you can practice your skills anytime. And as you say, sometimes it's easy to do this stuff when life is going well. We think, oh, I don't need to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But we wouldn't treat our physical muscles like that. You wouldn't say, well, I worked out last week, so I don't need to go to the gym ever again. We know that you need to keep practicing them in order to stay strong. Mental strength is the same. You have to keep practicing these exercises. And there's always opportunities, whether it's a bad day, a problem that you're facing at school, a struggle with something at home. There's always different adversity opportunities for us to then be real with kids and to take those real life opportunities to say, here's how to apply this exercise right now.
I know people would love to be able to follow you and find out more about what you have to say and obviously your other books, but how can people find you online in that social media space?
The best place to find me is my website, which is Amy Morin, LCSW, as in licensed clinical social worker.com. On my website, you find links to my books, my TEDx talk, and information on how to follow me on social media.
And I have to add, TEDx talk is one of the most viewed ever. It is fantastic and highly recommend. It's just a starting point for everything that Amy Morin does. She's a best-selling author and psychotherapist. The new book, now out, is 13 Things Strong Kids Do. Think big, feel good, act brave. Amy, this is the first time we've had a chance to dialogue, and I hope it's not the last time. Thank you for what you do, and I wish you nothing but success.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it so much.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the BiPal, the only online comic book review column that's halfway vaccinated. My name is Hannibal Taboo, and you can find everything you'd like to know about me using the social media tag @HANNI, B as in bounce, A-L, T as in tough, A, B as in bounce, U. That's on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, etc., etc. Likewise, you can find HannibalTaboo.com for all your content needs. These are reviews for books that came out April 7th, 2021. And there are four sections to the buy pile. The first, the titular buy pile, is for books that were so good they demand to be purchased in the moment, or they come from a series that's been great for so long that until they have three not so great issues, it gets to keep the spot. Let's start there with a brand new book on the buy pile, Green Lantern number 1 from DC Comics, with the creative team of Jeffrey Thorne, Dexter Soy, Marco Santucci, Alex Sinclair, and Rob Lee. John Stewart is stepping up in a big way as the future of the spaceborne police force is at an unexpected crossroads. The one consistent thing you will see here is Stewart in a role of leadership, rallying forces and making decisions as a delightful tableau is set for new adventures. There's a lot going on in this issue, but the careful script from Jeff Thorne balances all these elements with grace. The nascent United Planets has come to hold a conclave on Oa, where the assembled species will determine whether or not the Green Lantern's traditional homeworld will take place in their governance or be excluded based on their self-imposed mandate to police the universe. Of course, everybody's shown up with their own agenda. That has led to challenges, or the delightful creative tension here would not happen. We should stop and talk about the visual presentation from Dexter Soy, Marco Santucci, Alex Sinclair, and Rob Lee. There are a lot of alien species here, and very complex combat scenes. Each background character looks like they're living their own story, and when we're introduced to the likes of Thanagarian Amaera Kallan, or the Conclave itself, which makes some nod to the Republic Senate of the Star Wars prequels, it's a visual spectacle that drives the narrative forward. There's likewise an integration of things going on elsewhere. Hal Jordan serves as a window into things outside of Oa. Teen Lantern has a, I've been to Gym World, I've got this, kind of vibe going on. All that shows a level of coordination and pre-planning that's rare outside of crossovers. All of this is very hard to do, but the team here is firing on all cylinders. There's a clever bit of metaphor here as well. The Green Lanterns are a policing force, and they are facing the possible displeasure of the populaces they police. Stewart in particular makes decisions that work to gain confidence instead of garnering opposition, unlike, oh, Minneapolis. Given the specific challenges of our time and how law enforcement tactics are literally on trial, i.e. Minneapolis, or Brooklyn, or wherever else, this is an enormously savage choice to reinforce the position of the titular character. With new ideas and fresh takes, this is an enormously accessible new direction that seems well-coordinated and well-considered, given a touch of poignancy if you read Future State and learn what's on the horizon. So the rating there would be buy. Next up, we have honorable mentions, which are books that are good, but maybe not good enough to get your precious coin from your precious bag of holding. Getting real D&D 5th edition there on you. There, we find Batman number 107 from DC Comics with the creative team of James Tynion IV, Jorge Jimenez, Tomio Murray, Clayton Cowles, and Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. This issue checks in on maybe-not-so-rich Batman battling both a mystery involving the Scarecrow and some gang of randos with the threat of the Gotham City Police Department weaponized against him by the newly elected vigilante-hating mayor Christopher Nakano. Barbara Gordon provides she's a better problem solver from behind a keyboard than she is swinging on rooftops, and Harley Quinn has a weird interaction with Gotham's newest costume crime fighter. Virtually none of that is interesting, which somehow makes the dazzling backup feature, which we'll spend most of this review on, shine all the brighter. Quickly, sure, Jorge Jimenez, Tomio Moore, and Clayton Cowles make the shadowy streets of Gotham as stylish and ridiculous as, well, an average episode of Gotham, with a kind of dynamic presentation for the people hearing. That's fine. The actual plot, Batman doing a Laura Brent impersonation of himself, is not too far from stuff that's been done a million times. The idea of a scion of wealth suddenly facing down the gun barrels of the police makes him no more relatable, as perhaps he doesn't grasp how even the city turns against his brand of justice. Forget about all that. None of that matters now that we finally, finally see Ghostmaker show up and be somebody. In 10 pages, this James Tynion IV script is more inventive, more adventurous, more bold, and more importantly, more fun than anything that's even brushed past Gotham City in years. With queer-friendly James Bond vibes, he opens having left a man and a woman in bed before Halo dropping into an impossible situation. This has all the excitement of when Dick Grayson was an agent of Spiral in half the page count. The monologues, the clever tie-ins to continuity, the fun new villains. This is amazingly creative, with panache that toys with cliches, but never lets them take the wheel. Imagine The Blacklist mashed up with ABC's Alias, with a dash of Machete, and maybe even a hint of Batman 66 in terms of panache thrown in. You might get a taste for what's happened here. There are weird things here. Instead of Alfred, Ghostmaker has an artificial intelligence called Icon, which might cause some confusion with both Dr. Icon and the milestone hero who's bounced around the DCU a bit. There's another familiar name here that has no apparent legacy connection to the last two dudes who used the name, which may have some deeper meaning or may have just been an oops moment. The key antagonist for this short, despite some fire dialogue, is not too ideologically far from a Marvel one who faced off against Marvel Boy down to the firearm. These aren't big enough challenges to stop the ride on this train of fun. It should be noted that Ghostmaker pops up in the main story away from Batman, and he's even more interesting there than anything else that happens. In a perfect world, this backup would have been the first we saw of Ghostmaker, not that weepy puppy dog frenemies act with Bruce Wayne. Alas, as it is, this may not be enough for the price of admission, but maybe it can keep the science fiction adventure going next time and maybe steal some of the page count from the dollar conscious and dour Dark Knight. So that would be a rating of honorable mention. The next section of our reviews is called the Meh Pile. That's for books that, I mean, they happen. If you care, you care, but mostly you probably shouldn't. Books that fell into that category include Suicide Squad number 2, Crime Syndicate number 2. They really just can't dig in and be villains there. Amazing Spider-Man number 63, which, again, was actually close, though. America Chavez Made in the USA number 2. King and Black Planet and Symbiotes, number 3, meh, 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 all down the line. The next section of our reviews is called No, Just No, and it's for books that are abjectly terrible and should not be purchased under any circumstance. There, we find two books. First, King and Black number 5 from Marvel Comics with the creative team of Donny Cates, Ryan Stegman, J.P. Meyer, Frank Martin, Jason Keith, and Clayton Cowles. Oh. Oh, no. All right, well, in the immortal words of the philosopher Alvin Joyner, it all comes down to this, as the winding and worrisome King and Black crossover comes to an ending that is needlessly overwrought and largely unimportant. This final, hopefully, issue posits the possibility that everything that happened in every previous issue, every tie-in, and every offhanded reference didn't matter as much as a hill of beans. The works and machinations of Avengers, X-Men, gods, and heroes, pfft. It's all unimportant, as a symbiote from an earlier age, which was too short and too underdeveloped, a twisted to build on itself, steps forth and kind of just marches through wildly implausible symbolic gestures. Paul Bettany knows what we're talking about here. To literally ignore a poster-worthy assemblage of heroes and take on the god of symbiotes and paper-thin motivations, no. There's not a lot to say here. Ryan Stegman, J.P. Meyer, Frank Martin, Jason Keith, and Clayton Cowles all showed up for work and did the best one could with white text on a red background or white text on a black background. Truly an accessibility nightmare. Don't call the Section 508 crowd. And the goopy, ragged edges of sacks of space goo. No, alas, this cliched, you kill it, you bought it challenge is in the hands of a script from Donny Cates and whatever editorial guidance he received, invalidating every previous page in an abrupt and overpowered finale. Much like The Rise of Skywalker, it's over and that's something at least. Let's never speak of this again, shall we? The rating is no, just no. Finally, we have Avengers number 44 from Marvel Comics with the creative team of Jason Aaron, Javier Garon, David Curiel, and Corey Pettit. For many issues, the Phoenix Force has held a group of heroes hostage, forcing them to wield its power in combat with each other like a low-rent Secret Wars, all to decide who will be the next host for the fiery cosmic power. Yep. That conflict comes to an end this issue with results that at best could be considered baffling and at worst could be considered insipid. Captain America versus Black Panther. Black Widow versus Shanna the She-Devil, Namor versus She-Hulk. All this ultimately pointless pugilism happens while Thor grapples with a terrifying revelation that's the equivalent of a Maury Povich surprise. If you had plugged a few quarters into an arcade game and ended up with this selection of heroes, you might think it was pretty fly. As a story, air quotes, especially with the wildly nonsensical and virtually non-sequitur conclusion left there, it's frustrating in the extreme. Javier Garon, David Curiel, and Corey Pettit did everything they could with his visual presentation, casting a red-orange monochrome for most of its panel space on purpose. No, alas, all the fault lies here with the execution and conception of the Jason Aaron script, which had most of the actions of most of the people here be ultimately unimportant. Much like King in Black, for this narrative to invalidate much of his previous events seems like a thematic deficiency worth lancing like a boil. It's quite a deflated balloon when you get to the end of it, which is not what you want for such a high-octane production. That rating would be no, just no. With two stinkers and a purchase, this was a rough week, but we're doing the best we can. We're trying to get vaccinated. We're trying to get everybody safe. Please wear your masks. This is not over. There's variants aplenty, and vaccines won't get to some parts of the world until 2024. So please be safe. My name is Hannibal Taboo. As always, thank you to Tawala and Mo for having me here. I'll see you next week.
Hey guys, Mo Kelly here. The new daily Nerdorama podcast is featured on iHeartRadio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast feed to get your daily dose of nerd news. Also available on iTunes, Spreaker, and all the top podcasting apps. It's free and perfect for everyone in your nerd family.
Nerdorama is produced by Tawala Sharp and continues to be a segment on The Mo Kelly Show. Weekends on KFI Los Angeles. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Nerdorama News.
Until next time, keep it comic.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.